I am never forget the day I first meet the great Lobachevsky. In one word, he told me secret of success in mathematics. Plagiarize. Plagiarize. Let no one else's work evade your eyes. Remember why the good Lord made your eyes. So don't shade your eyes, but plagiarize, plagiarize, plagiarize. Only be sure always to call it, please, research.
That, of course, was Tom Lehrer singing Lobachevsky, his hilarious song about how to succeed in academia. But plagiarism is no laughing matter in research and education. The Internet has made it easier than ever to copy other people's work and pass it off as one's own. However, the Internet has also brought us new ways to detect plagiarism and other forms of academic dishonesty. I'm very pleased to welcome to our show now Harold Skip Garner, Executive Director and Professor at the Virginia Bioinformatics Institute at Virginia Tech, who has researched the prevalence of plagiarism in medical journals, and Melissa Anderson, Professor of Higher Education at the University of Minnesota, Minneapolis, who currently studies research integrity and international collaborations. Hello and welcome to our show.
Thank you very much.
Melissa, I've read that many students today don't recognize plagiarism as stealing. They think that anything they find on the web is in the public domain. Is it a problem educating them to recognize and avoid plagiarism?
Yes, unfortunately it is. People seem to assume that anything that is on the web is public, that if in fact people didn't want their material to be used freely, they wouldn't put it on the web. Students have a sense that they can take what they want from music archives and just download it without any consequences. And so we need to make people understand, make these students understand that there are different norms for publication and that they can't simply represent other people. People's work as their own.
But does plagiarism cause real harm?
There are people who suggest that it does not, particularly in scientific research, because what it does is it simply make findings available to a wider audience. But it does, in fact, harm the system. It breaks the connection between the original work and the credit that people get for it. It also breaks the connection between the work and the responsibility for that work, how it was done and how the findings are interpreted and so on. It also can skew meta-analyses. These are analyses when people are looking at a wide range of studies to see if a particular finding is supported by subsequent work. And if in the case of plagiarism, all that subsequent work is just a plagiarized version of the original study, then it will appear that there's a great deal of subsequent support for the original work when, in fact, there isn't.
Now, you teach doctoral students. By that time, shouldn't we expect them to know all of the rules?
Well, we can and do expect them to know the rules. Students are taught as in elementary school that they have to be careful of sources. I don't think doctoral students plagiarize because they don't know better. They do it because they're under pressure, because they're under tight deadlines, or, unfortunately, because they think they won't get caught.
Skip, you've examined a great many articles in a database called PubMed. How big a problem is plagiarism in medical research?
Well, unfortunately, it's both a big and a small problem. The fact is that, you know, there's of the order of 1% or so of articles that have some possible real ethical issue where they either contain plagiarized material or they're another type of plagiarism called duplicate publication, where a person publishes the same thing over and over again. But it's also a small problem when you realize that there's about 22 million scientific articles in Medline, and less than 1% of them are, you know, have a problem. But you know, indeed, we actually study this among professionals because they're the ones who should also know better. But because professionals use professionals' publications, there's real consequences. To kind of go back to your question before, the research that's published by doctors and researchers in the medical literature can be used for clinicians to actually make decisions in patient treatment. And so if those decisions are based on literature that is somehow tainted or just plain out wrong, then that has serious consequences. It means that it can affect you, the patient. In addition, all of the literature is a foundation for future research that's conducted by other researchers in order to make advances in areas like cancer or neurological diseases. And so if that is not correct, then the researchers will go down false pathways and things like that that will limit progress. So there's a lot of ways that this can affect you, and the professionals should know better.
Who sponsored your research?
Well, I have several sponsors. The ethics research was sponsored by a small private foundation originally, and then by the Office of Research Integrity at Health and Human Services. I have other primary research programs in areas of cancer, genetics, and genomics, and those are sponsored by the NIH and other private research groups.
Now, how far back did your research go? Has the situation worsened in recent years?
Well, we analyzed everything that was available in Medline, and of course, Medline was started in the 60s, and there was a lot of print articles before that, and they're spending their time going backwards in time. But just if you look at the growth of Medline today, it grows around 500,000 to 600,000 new articles each year. And so just keeping up with that is extremely hard to do. And, of course, we've analyzed everything that's in there going back as far as is captured. And to quickly answer your question, it looked like the incidence of problems in the literature where there were things that were too highly similar, which is detected by our software, was growing and growing and growing until about 2 years ago, where it seems to have leveled off.
Because people were being caught?
Is this happening? Well, it could be because people were being caught, or just be aware of the fact that that there's now software and other people who are looking.
Now, you mentioned people who duplicate their own work. Why do they plagiarize themselves? Is it the need to submit an article to only one journal at a time?
Well, there's probably a variety of reasons for that. One is, of course, just inflation of your resume. That, you know, that kind of stuff, if anybody's really looking, is very easy to find. A lot of people, you know, can become desperate. In today's scientific society where, you know, the funding rate for grant applications is of the order of 10%, it really means that you have to scramble to get funding for your research. And so the competition is very stiff, and so as a consequence, the you know, people are willing to stretch the rules and sometimes get caught.
But it seems to me that using the same thing you wrote before in a new article isn't really plagiarizing. It's just simply furthering what you're talking about.
Well, again, I think what if it is indeed furthering, where you're adding new material, new discoveries, then that's perfectly valid paper. But if it's something that's virtually identical, in today's world where everything's available electronically, there's no real reason to publish it in multiple venues. This is also a particular problem, and I'm sure that Melissa will have a comment on this, for international writers, because there could be pressure to write in both an English journal, which is considered a higher quality, and perhaps a journal in their native language, which is considered so they can access, so that the researchers and others in their nation can access the information easily as well. So, and that's and it's a question whether that is really unethical or not. It's how humans want to interpret it, whether it's good or bad.
My guess, go ahead, Melissa.
I'd like to make a distinction here between self-plagiarism, which is essentially duplicate publication in whole and in part. If a researcher is simply replicating an entire article and publishing it several times, that's true self-plagiarism. That's totally inappropriate. If, however, a researcher is simply repeating a passage that represents the same methodology in a couple of different articles, many scientists don't see that as self-plagiarism. They see it as accurate representation of the methodology.
Would it be acceptable for the person to write, as I have written earlier in and a number of papers, blah, blah, blah.
Yes, that is the preferable approach. It's better to do that than simply to replicate the methods. Yes, exactly.
Well, my guests are Melissa Anderson, who's a professor of higher education at the University of Minnesota, Minneapolis, and Harold Skip Garner, executive director and professor at the Virginia Bioinformatics Institute at Virginia Tech. We're talking about plagiarism in academia. I know that some professors have actually been accused of plagiarizing their own students. Are we still seeing a lot of that? That's harder to detect, isn't it?
Yes, it is, because students would be more reluctant to come forward and accuse a professor, particularly a supervising professor, of that kind of behavior. The hierarchy and its rewards and cautions remain in place.
You wanted to add to that, Skip?
Yeah, and in scientific writing, it's often a team effort where there could be contributions by a student and a faculty member. I think the problems here are where a student, for example, might write something in a thesis which is not in a peer-reviewed journal, and then a professor later takes that and uses it. And in those particular cases, it's pretty clear that the consensus is really unethical, that if someone really did the writing and the thinking, their name should be on the paper, too.
And this is not just science, and it goes back a long time. In the classic film Red Shoes, we begin with students going to a ballet performance and recognizing that the music was not written by the professor but by one of his students. So I guess there's nothing new here. In that case, all they could do is say, well, we know. Skip, you got quite a few journals to reconsider articles, some going back years. How many retractions did that result in? Didn't some of them refuse to retract plagiarized articles?
Oh, absolutely. It's a very complicated area that you get into and try to navigate because there's a lot of stakeholders here. There's the authors of the original paper who feel slighted. There's the authors who did the plagiarism who may or may not feel as though it's wrong, and the editors of the various journals, and then, of course, the reviewers who reviewed both articles and maybe didn't find the original plagiarism. We found a lot of cases of this because software could exhaustively go through and compare all these different articles in Medline. And in one of our studies that we reported in Science Magazine a few years ago, we actually sent out a little query to everybody, to all of those stakeholders, to ask them if they could comment on pairs of papers that we showed were virtually identical. And the results were quite amazing. What we've recently done, what that ended up doing was, of course, we are not an ethics body. All we simply did was could make statements about the highly similar nature of it. But it seemed to trigger a lot of investigations. There were at least 100 investigations triggered out of our 200 pairs of papers that we looked at. And, of course, that was 200 out of about 8,000 pairs that we had suspected had some very large amount of similarity with non-overlapping authors. Now, these 100 investigations fairly quickly yielded at least 50 retractions.
Wow.
The interesting thing here is that in the year before that, the number was the largest peak in retractions due to plagiarism that was found by Serendipity, and that was 17. So it's very clear that software followed up by a process could very much clean up our scientific, indeed any literature.
Well, Melissa, how closely does suspect text have to match existing documents to be picked up by a computer program?
Well, that varies quite a bit according to the program.
What about paraphrasing?
Those programs are getting increasingly sophisticated. Now, appropriate paraphrasing is exactly what we want to see in work that's being used in subsequent texts. But as long as it's cited and referenced appropriately. But in fact, paraphrasing and simply the plagiarism of ideas, which goes a step beyond paraphrasing, can be difficult for some of these software programs to detect.
And are there computer programs that assist with paraphrasing?
Well, unfortunately, any of the detection programs, if accessible to the people who wish to plagiarize can be of assistance. Here's what we've become aware of. Some of those programs are able to be accessed by students. So students will run their paper through the program and see if the plagiarism is caught. It's caught. So they go back and change it, run it through again, it's caught again, and they keep changing it until the link is broken between what they've written and the original source. Now, in fact, there have been some researchers who argue this is a positive development, that students thereby learn how to paraphrase. It seems to me that we're teaching them exactly the wrong thing, how to paraphrase just enough not to be caught.
My guests are Melissa Anderson, professor of higher education at the University of Minnesota, Minneapolis, who currently studies research integrity and international collaborations, and Harold Skip Garner, executive director and professor at the Virginia Bioinformatics Institute at Virginia Tech. He has researched the prevalence of plagiarism in medical journals. And we will continue our conversation after we take a little break. Stay with us. We're back with Harold Skip Garner, executive director and professor at the Virginia Bioinformatics Institute, Virginia Tech, and Melissa Anderson, professor of higher education at the University of Minnesota in Minneapolis. We're talking about plagiarism in academia, and we've been getting messages from our listeners. Peter from North Carolina writes, I've taught graduate class as an adjunct at three universities. I've had numerous students plagiarize in their papers. One student even plagiarized at great length an article I had edited. I had two students hand in the same exact paper in the same class in the same semester. University chairs and deans have no stomach for dealing with it. He goes on to say that in one situation, my chair would not even return my calls when I tried speaking to him about a student who had plagiarized. And Skip, you tell a story about, or is it you? I don't know, but I've heard about an NYU professor who published a blog post that went viral about what happened to him when he discovered cheating among his students using Turnitin software. He got lower course evaluations from the students and a lower raise afterward. But more than that, it poisoned the atmosphere in his classes, and he no longer enjoyed teaching. He concluded that it wasn't worthwhile to police his students. Have you been hearing of cases like this?
Well, I've heard of cases like that. Every time I give a seminar somewhere on this topic, there's always someone in the audience who's got a story to tell, where they're a victim or they've discovered it. And I've even got my own story. But before I mention that, I've looked at the article about the NYU professor, and indeed, all this can have very negative consequences. And it's one of those topic areas where we feel uncomfortable and we don't really like to work. And so it has bad connotation whether you're working on the side of trying to rid the world of inappropriate publishing, or if you're trying to enforce the rules and policies of, and the honor codes of a university. It can all have negative consequences. I remember when I was starting this research direction, which was an extension of our software called ET Blast, which is free on the web, and it was really designed to help people better find the literature and work with it. But when we turned it loose to check the literature is when we started finding a lot of things. And I was, quote, mentored, unquote, by the dean and legal department of the university I was previously at, to kind of say, do I really want to have my name associated with plagiarism, even if I'm detecting it? Mm-hmm. Is that really what I want to do? And again, there's just fear there of legal exposure as well as just negative connotations. So people want to stay away from this topic area. And as long as that is true, it means that we're going to continue to have you know, bad literature emerging unless we're very diligent looking for it.
Now, what kinds of...
I'd like to add that, in fact, because plagiarism is one of the three forms of behavior recognized under the U.S. federal policy on research misconduct, many administrators think it's just too hot to handle, that it, in fact, is a form of federally recognized research misconduct. I think that the professor in question at NYU may indeed have experienced some backlash in terms of student displeasure, but that can happen for all kinds of different behaviors that faculty are appropriately involved in. For instance, emphasizing good writing, emphasizing appropriate interaction in class, emphasizing correct usage of statistics. There are many things that we have to teach our students that are technical, that are very important to do, that don't increase our popularity with students. But what we need to do is make sure that the students understand that if they're going to be in the club, that is part of the conversation in science, they have to be able to just naturally follow the rules of the community. And they should be thanking their faculty members for making sure that they're behaving appropriately to become members of that community.
Is it possible to detect plagiarized text that's been translated into another language?
Oh, absolutely.
That can be,
if you've tried using the Google Translate tool recently, for example, you'll find out how accurate it is. And so we've found many, many cases of this, and we haven't even had to go and start using tools like that. What we did was, frequently people who publish in other journals in other languages, they write an English abstract if that journal has their abstract entered into Medline. And so it is from that English abstract, comparing to other English abstracts, where you can then link it to a journal article in a foreign language. Then once you actually look at the paper and you see that all the pictures and all the graphics and tables and data are identical, you can quickly get an idea, even if you don't speak the language, that it's suspicious. And, of course, at any university you can find someone who speaks virtually everything.
Of course, we're suggesting here that the plagiarism is only occurring in the other country, but I'm assuming this can happen either way. Do journals in other countries have different standards regarding what constitutes plagiarism? Virginia? Or Melissa?
Go ahead, Melissa.
Unfortunately, yes. We've heard again and again that journals in other countries are even less willing to take on what might be plagiarism in order to verify if it is or not. In some countries, there's a sense that plagiarism is simply not a problem, that in fact many, many people do it. It's widely recognized. It's something that we just simply shouldn't worry about. Now, I think going on the assumption that there are different standards among scientists in different parts of the world is very dangerous, because in fact there's no country on earth that sanctions or that says that plagiarism is appropriate. All policies at the national level say that plagiarism is wrong, and I think sometimes it can be an excuse that is too easily turned to, when in fact plagiarism is just simply wrong wherever you're practicing science.
But aren't scientific journals that go easy on plagiarism opening themselves up to being sued? Because if I were the person who were being plagiarized, I wouldn't, and I knew that they hadn't really applied very strict standards, then they've stolen my work.
Well, again, who do you sue? What lawsuits in this kind of territory would probably be over copyrighted material as opposed to plagiarism. Again, the journals, except for a few journals that we found that are obviously involved at the editorial level in plagiarism and publishing plagiarized material, most journals almost all journals are spending a tremendous amount of effort trying to make certain they do a thorough and complete review. The problem is that they haven't had the tools like ET Blast and other tools for the reviewers to look and check and see if there happens to be an inappropriate amount of highly similar material there. And then they can make a judgment, do we accept it for publication or not? The a lawsuit could happen when one journal would sue another one because the plagiarized material had been copyrighted by the earlier journal. But this is a very small community, although in the medical arena there's 5, 10, 20,000 journals out there. But still, it's a small contingency. And, you know, who has the money and time and effort to sue one journal suing another one over a copyright infringement, which they may not be completely responsible for, given the limitations of a human scientific peer review?
A listener in Long Island City writes, what do anti-plagiarism advocates say about legislation to protect intellectual property like SOPA and PIPA? How much should arenas like the Internet be policed in order to balance ethics and intellectual freedom?
Well, I have to tell you that I'm very much an advocate of open and available information because we depend on it every day in order to actually efficiently and effectively conduct our research. I know that that there are researchers in my institute who are blogging continuously about this SOPA and other legislation that could really inhibit our ability to make scientific progress. I was working on a paper that I'm getting ready to submit, and I had to look up a quick fact, and unfortunately Wikipedia was shut down, so I then had it turned from a 15-second lookup to a half-hour lookup. We've just grown critically dependent on this, and
it might have been okay, Skip, because based on my own experience with Wikipedia, the entry that involves me, half of the information is incorrect, so it doesn't matter anyway.
Well, of course, you have to be cautious.
I'd Melissa? Like to mention a form of plagiarism that does not involve openness at all and is one of the particularly insidious forms, and that is during a grant submission. A reviewer might look at a grant proposal and actually write a review that says this is garbage and then turn around and submit that proposal to the same or another funding agency and thereby profit from someone else's ideas through plagiarizing a proposal. Same thing could happen with a manuscript that's turned down at a journal. Though in those cases, it's only a very astute editor or another reviewer who can actually make those kinds of connections. But unfortunately, that's a really particularly insidious form of plagiarism.
We thank you both so much for talking with us today. Melissa Anderson is a professor of higher education at the University of Minnesota, Minneapolis. And Harold Gardner is the executive director and professor at the Virginia Bioinformatics Institute at Virginia Tech. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you very much.
It was great to talk to you.